Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from down under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Sports podcasters. I'm Neil Wallace Bruce, and I'm with Justin Williams.
How's it going, guys?
We have a special guest today from Melbourne City. In fact, the centre back, Samantha Johnson. You can find her on Instagram at Dream on Rose. Samantha, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming on. So, currently, you are playing over in Australia. Tell us a little bit about that and how it's different from playing in North America.
Right. Well, this is my fourth time here. So W League's pretty good for especially us Americans who play in the NWSL because it's kind of right in the smack in the middle of our off season. So it's pretty, I mean, I don't know about the difference in terms of like, what can I really pinpoint? Because obviously we just kind of look at it as stay fit year round. Obviously it's a gorgeous country, so we don't mind skipping winter if you're definitely living in a market where there's real snow. So summer here yes. When we come down and then we get to just, you know, train and be around more soccer girls, which is always great. It's always entertaining to be around people like us. And then to get games in and to keep fit. And then usually in a normal year, we would return in February and then come back to preseason at the end of SL. But this year, since COVID pushed back a just touch, so the season goes from December to April. But I'm loving being back in Melbourne. It's my third time here. And the league is, you know, it's pretty good. So I like it.
What are some of the things that need to happen to, I guess, progress the game a little bit? What are some things that you would like to see happen?
I think from a youth side and like a development side, especially in America, I think that they just have to make it a little bit more accessible in terms of who can have access or, you know, find the talent to play at the higher levels when you're younger. The pathways are pretty much obviously like the style or the structures paid to play, as we know. If you can pay for like a good club team or pay to go on the trips and stuff like that, like obviously you can have a better chance in being selected. And I think it just creates like a skewed player pool where you don't see maybe the talent that could have gone through because some players can't pay, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 each season to be a part of a really good club team. So I think that model really restricts the talent pool, and it's not a true talent pool, especially in America. In Australia, what I'm working on here is trying to actually just develop like a proper pathway to the W League, which is the league that I play now. Because I've got so many girls and just kids being like, how do I get to W League? And I'm like, actually, that's a great question. You know? Right. So the system is a little bit gapped between their lower, the amateur league and the W League. There's not like a real pathway, whereas like each team ideally would have like a second team, if you will, you know, like kind of like on the men's side where you have like almost like a feeder. So trying to implement things like that to enhance the game for the development side. And then I think of as a professional in like the marketing stuff, it's like having people like Maggie and like exposing people like her that give players like an, you know, access to get more marketing opportunities. Cause obviously like kicking a ball for the normal average player in America is like, you get like $25,000 to $27,000 a year in 12 months. So like, that's not like you're poor basically, obviously, but like we have such good brands and good people and smart people. Like we can like promote ourselves and make way more money outside of soccer, but we just don't have the connection to those people who can make the phone calls at the moment.
Shout out to Maggie, by the way, at the Trinity 3 agency. She's doing fine work out there. You've had the unique opportunity of playing both in the NWSL and here in North America, where I am now, and the W League, where I used to be in Australia.
Yeah.
What are some of the differences that you can see between the two leagues?
Well, the most obvious difference is just like the athleticism level in America is like just through the roof. And I think because it's our pathway, so most of us who achieve like and get to play and, you know, get drafted or play in the NWSL, we've already gone through the college system. So like our development of the body and like lifting and just being stronger and faster and fitter is just like pretty much next level at that point, right? So the college system definitely helps your like physical development. I don't think like the soccer part is any better or worse Like, I don't think it's that. I think it's just because we're just physically more dominant that it seems very different in terms of the competitive levels. So like here, like there's literally children on my team, like kids who are like 16 to like 20, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like turning 30. So I'm like, I've already been professional for so long, but I started later than them, if that makes sense. Cause I started being pro when I was 21 or 22, whereas they're in a pro environment at 16, 17, 18, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to touch base on the fan base, because thinking about that, I mean, what our listeners may or may not know is the W League, is I think all but one club are aligned to a club that has a men's team, whereas in the NWSL, it's largely standalone clubs. So
right.
What is that like in terms of the fan bases, the differences between North America and Australia?
Right. So the difference, obviously, is kind of how you allude, like, you know, what it is like, because in the NWSL, it's so separate. Like, we have no association usually with the men's side, unless you're actually playing in the same stadium and doing a double header, right? Which is pretty rare. It's not a consistent event, but I think that makes it harder to rally the troops, if you will, because obviously you can't piggyback off of a market that the men have already created if you're independent. And in the W League, yeah, like you said, all but one, which is Canberra, have a men's side. And Canberra, actually, they have the best crowd in W League.
Right.
And it's partially because, obviously, I think the team is the only professional sports team, or, you know, good sports team kind of in the area. So people really rally around that. Mm-hmm. And this year, the team's, you know, doing quite well. But I think the support is better if you can be partnered with the men's market, just because you can use their resources as well.
Right.
Like, obviously, rally the troops, but you can use, like, the front office and stuff to kind of promote things a bit easier. Yeah.
Leverage the marketing department.
Yeah, 100%, instead of just recreating the wheel, you know.
You actually played for the U.S. national team under 17 level. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
Would you say that's a career highlight, representing your country?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's really an interesting experience, actually, to, like, be selected to represent your country. And it's obviously cool because you get to travel the world. And so we did our my team, just because it just happened to be my age group, was the first 17th World Cup that they did, which I'm glad they decided to start the Youth World Cup at 17s, because it just, you need that experience, especially if you're going to kind of have aspirations to be on the full team or just be professional in general. Like, you definitely want to have those tough pressure experiences, especially out of your comfort zone in another country, earlier than later. So that was cool. We did our qualification was in Trinidad and Tobago, and then the actual World Cup was in New Zealand, which is pretty cool. We lost in the finals, but I would say it's definitely, like, one of, like, the best moments I've had, because even though we lost, like, just because of the experience, like, I think it helped me just develop more of, like, a good mental toughness, if you will, because as you can imagine, being 16 or 17, the entire experience is probably kind of strange, being, like, so far away from home. I think I missed, like, a month and a half of school in high school. And my teachers were like, where are you? I'm like, the World Cup. They're like, what is that? I'm like, right. So I came back to school and I had, like, D's and F's. And I was like, I need A's and B's. Like, I'm going to USC. And they're like, well, you have to do your whatever. I was like, no, like, I'm not about to take geometry over again. Like, just give me, what do we got to do? Like, work out some deals, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I basically kind of, me and my mom kind of learned the art of hustle in high school, because the teachers didn't understand that I had to miss so much school for soccer, you know, and they weren't getting it until I kind of explained, like, you know, like, you don't get it. Like, I'm going to school for free, so I need, like, A's and B's so I can get there, you know?
Exactly.
And so it was kind of funny. The World Cup was great. So, and I hope, and whoever works for that type of, you know, aspiration, like, they really appreciate, like, what it means to represent America, especially, like, during this time.
Especially with COVID kind of being its, like, own unique era. Like, 2020 essentially was January, February, half of March, and then it hasn't really come back. I feel like I'm on 2020 part two. 2021 is just the same year. Yeah. So when you, like, evidently you had time off, but when you came back, how was that for preparation? And also, how was that conversation to come back? Like, did you have to almost prove yourself again? Like, I'm just curious how...
Oh, hell no. I already played 6 or 7 years. What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Okay, good. Like, I don't know. Because you're like, okay, I'm stepping back, and you step back and you show up.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you love soccer, obviously, so you stayed fit that whole time.
Well, so, I don't know about fit. I did not. No, absolutely okay. not. I like to party and drink, so no, I was not fit. However, I got the mental and emotional side down packed, so I can just literally just show up. And the physical side is the easiest part of the game, because, I mean, you can control most of it. I'm like, okay, I know exactly how many weeks it takes to be fit. I know the process of failing versus succeeding when you're trying to get fit. Like, it's just like, once you do it for so long, you know what I'm saying? You kind of understand the ebbs and flows. So I'm like, okay, I may not be the fit on day one, but I'll be at the standard where I can obviously train at the professional pace. But game fitness and everything, that comes over time. You just have to be patient, you know? I was just more worried about, like, pretty good tactically, because I've been watching soccer since I was, like, 14. But, you know, learning new systems and, like, getting my touch back and, like, understanding. And you have to, like, learn the players around you, which does obviously take time. But I try to be mindful of that, because obviously my job is just to make everyone else look good, because I'm the center back. So I just have to learn how they want the ball and tackle people, which is the best part of my position.
Yeah. Oh, you're a fan of tackling.
Yeah. You don't play center back unless you tackle.
Yeah. Unless you want to put people on the ground, let them know who's boss.
I was going to say, I had a center back who was scared of tackling. They did, like, standing tackles the whole time. And I was like, okay, well.
They weren't a center back. They were a midfielder standing next to the goal.
Apparently.
they were a number six in disguise.
Number six.
Yes.
We lost every game that season, so.
It's okay.
Now, Samantha, you mentioned that you're looking to come back to Chicago later on this year. Could we see you back in the NWSL, perhaps?
I mean, I can't say no, can't say yes, because, you know, you just never know. I guess I've been telling Maggie, like, the NWSL experience, like, I've done it, obviously, so I would love to try new countries and new experiences, but, like, we have such a specific mission, if you will. Like, we're really trying to help the next generation coming into the NWSL, and that's already in the NWSL, so it would make it easier for me to be in America and be closer to the players that I want to help, you know? So, and I also just think, like, the whatever opportunity is there, like, you just have to take, obviously, because you don't get many opportunities to be rostered or let alone in the starting 11 of most teams. So we'll just have to figure it out. I can't rule anything out, obviously, so we'll see.
All right. Do you have a dream place to play, by the way? Like, a dream location? Aside from Melbourne.
England.
England?
Yeah.
Is there a specific club?
Well, now that I'm on Melbourne City, I have to say Manchester City.
All right, the interview's over. Goodbye. And that's our time, ladies and gentlemen.
Shut up. Shut up. I can't.
I should point out that we're all Arsenal fans here. I won't hold it against.
That's too bad. I'm so sorry that you are an Arsenal fan.
Hey.
I'm really sorry. How's Lacazette doing, by the way? Is he still struggling mentally? Can't score any goals.
Him, Aubameyang, the coach, the fans are struggling mentally.
You know what? Those are the highest paid practice players I've ever seen, genuinely.
Wow.
Honestly.
Yep, I will point out that as we're recording, Arsenal are actually playing, and Nicolas Pepe just scored. So,
what's David Luiz doing out there? He's passing the ball to the other team.
Him and Mustafi.
That's a number six in disguise, right there.
That's what he's a nine. He's a nine playing center back. Yeah. I hate him. Oh my gosh.
The PlayStation defender just bombs forward, and doesn't come back. Gone in 60 seconds.
I can't. It really is amazing. It just cracks me up because obviously, like, all of those players, whatever, they play at the highest level possible. Obviously, they're very good. And we always, like, look up their salaries and they do the goofiest shit on the field. We're like, what is that? You get paid too much money to do that.
Honestly.
Like, it cracks us up.
I'm a huge fan of Ozil. The man could not play defense to save his life. Yeah, my guy.
You know, light work, obviously. Yeah. What about even Pogba? Pogba's doing the same thing at United. He's at this point, he's an Adidas model. Let's be clear.
Right. At this point. And Ozil was getting paid $350,000 to play Fortnite
each week.
That's the reality of the situation.
Well, you have a bit of hope with little Saka coming in.
I love Saka. He's so good.
I love him too. He's just so cute and just so good. Bless his little heart.
Samantha, this is obviously an Olympic year. It's an odd year. but it is an Olympic year. So can we have you back on when the Olympics come around to chat about all things Team USA and all that good stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. We've loved having you on today. And
Thank you.
We'll do it again, no doubt.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you for having me.
It was a pleasure. Yeah,
and when you come to Toronto, we'll take you for a drink and show you some nice clubs around here, some of the cool clubs.
Oh, I'm loving that. Speak my language.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at pro.sports.podcasters for the most current sports news. Now back to the show.
Yeah, who do you follow in the Olympics, whether it be winter or summer? Do you move towards Canada or are you on Germany's side?
Or England.
And what sports?
Well, that would genuinely depend on which sport we're talking about and what season. So, for instance, like soccer, it's primarily Germany. But, however, I will support, evidently, Canada until Canada no longer makes it very far. Like, for the qualifications for the World Cup, for instance, or even the Olympics, I will follow religiously, but I don't have my heart set on Canada actually doing me well.
Well, hold now, on, mind though, you, I would say Canada has a chance to make the next World Cup.
Oh, well, by default, they make the 2024 one, right? Because of 26, because of the they're hosting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even this one, yeah, you're right, they do, with Alphonso Davy and then David and any other D player that apparently just Dave name.
Just the guy that's playing in Turkey that scores every week for Beşiktaş, Laren.
Laren, Kyle Laren. Mm-hmm.
And then the goalkeeper from Red Star Belgrade, what's his name? I don't know.
You got me there.
But yeah, Canada has some ballers. Canada and the U.S., like the U.S., I can, if they, everything comes together, they can make the quarterfinals with like Pulisic and all these kids who are coming up in Europe. The guy that plays the Juventus, McKechnie, the guys at Barcelona. Imagine that 10 years ago, American playing for Barcelona and Juventus. What?
Yeah, wouldn't happen.
Would not happen.
Or even an American playing for Chelsea right now, too.
Right. Who was transferred for big money from Dortmund.
The Americans have put
a lot into their game. So that's the blueprint for Canada. Put money into the development of the game and the players will come through. We're seeing it with Davies. We're seeing it with who came through Vancouver. We're seeing it with Jonathan David. Guys like that. They're just going to keep persisting.
And even the ones that stay kind of domestic, like Jonathan Osorio. Like, yeah, he's domestic, but even when he plays internationally, you can see his drive, and he's a goal scorer. He's a threat, regardless where he goes. He's midfield, he's like a false nine. And I feel almost not bad for Osorio, but a sense people will look at him and go, oh, he doesn't play for a European country, therefore, potentially, he's not a threat. But he is a damn good threat, and he was under the radar, which could work in our favor. I think so, anyways. I can be entirely wrong, but that's why perceive it. So
yeah, because he'd be hard to scout. Some of these bigger countries, they may not be scouting the MLS. They may not know how he plays. So in a group match situation, he might be the wild card that other teams don't see coming.
Exactly. And I would almost argue he has more playoff experience than most people on the Canadian team, because he's been to the CONCACAF finals. He's been to the MLS finals four times. So four MLS finals, a CONCACAF final, the Canadian final six times maybe. So he's used to pressure. Now, albeit the World Cup is a different breed, but I would almost argue that at least the preliminary rounds might have similar pressure to an MLS final, especially if you're like trying to maintain top of the table, no?
Yeah. I mean, it's precious pressure. You know, you got to perform on the day, so it doesn't matter whether it's a league match or a cup match. The 90 minutes, you're out there to get the result.
Yeah, there's so much that's expected of you, regardless if you're playing for your national side or for a professional team. What's expected of you remains the same.
That's why you go out there and play.
Exactly.
What about hockey? Who do you root for in hockey?
Oh, hockey is Canada. I mean, now mind you, it is also Germany as well. Like, I will watch and support Germany, and like when Germany beat the States, not this year, it was like 2 years ago, they beat them like 3-1. I was very impressed. I was happy. I was actually in Germany when it happened, too. With that being said, when it comes down to Canada versus Germany, let's say in the finals, as much as I love Canada and it's been the place for me to grow, I would want Germany to win just because they've never won a title like that. Not to say I wouldn't be sad, or sorry, I wouldn't be happy or joyful if Canada won, but it would be nice to see a bit of a change in pace, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, you get used to watching Canada win in hockey. So to see someone else win, especially another side that you can support, it's a little more exciting. right?
Yeah, it's very titillating, if you will. It's like your underdog team wins, and you're like, ooh. Like when Roma made it all the way to the finals again in Champions League a few years back. They're not even in my team, but I was still supporting them at that point. I was like, yeah, go guys.
Because they're not supposed to be there.
Foreign.
Yeah, you can't help but root for the underdog.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that was a good time. How about you guys?
Who do
you
guys support? Well, for me, hockey, it's Canada. I mean, yeah. by a mile. It's not like the Netherlands or Jamaica is well represented on the ice in hockey. So for me, it's definitely Canada. World Cup, it's always the Netherlands, of course, given their rich history, right?
Yep.
And you can't help but root for the orange.
Of course.
And then the Olympics, it sort of depends on whether it's winter or summer, because, of course, Summer Olympics, Jamaicans have a strong presence, but so does Canada to a certain degree. Winter Olympics, the Canadians have a strong presence, but so does Netherlands to a certain degree. So there's always some crossover in certain events that either I'm very happy that half the field is represented by one of my nationalities, or I'm secretly rooting against one of them. It depends on the sport itself. But like for sprinting, for instance, half the field is Jamaican or Canadian. And I mean, if they're Canadian, they're basically Canadians of Jamaican descent. So almost anyone can win the 100 or 200 meter and I get to cheer. Yeah, I kind of love that situation. Yeah. How about you?
Look, I mean, hockey, I guess I'll say Canada because it's not a thing in Ghana and Australia.
Not too many hockey clubs in Ghana?
No.
Really?
Not many, if any. And Australia, they don't really get to the Olympics in ice hockey, but they have had success in the Winter Olympics with speed skating and also ski jumping and some of the other ski events. But it's, again, when it comes to the Olympics, Australia's happy to get a medal or two. It's not really, we're not like Canada trying to run the table at the Winter Olympics. So that's that. I guess close to home, the World Cup, Australia's played Ghana once, 2010. So that wasn't a fun time in the World Cup. I much prefer 2006 when both teams made the round of 16. I was like, yes, I want this every tournament. After growing up, never seeing either country make it to the World Cup, they both get to the World Cup. And then 2010, they're in the same group. So I was like, oh, great. One of them's going to have to miss out because Germany was in that group and they weren't. That was when Mesut Ozil was coming on the scene. Mesut Ozil and Kadira and those guys. So, yeah. I wanted a draw in that game when Ghana played Australia, and I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
Because growing up was always weird because I grew up in a Ghanaian home. So my parents would always tell me, you're Australian. Then I'd go to school in Australia, and then kids would be telling me, nah, you're from Ghana. So it was always a bit weird. Which team to go for. But yeah, I'll always say that I want to see both teams do well because they're both emerging nations in football. Hopefully, Ghana didn't make the 2018 World Cup, but Australia did. So hopefully both teams make it to 2022. Olympics, again, where this all started was actually in 1992, the Barcelona Olympics. So it was the bronze medal game and Ghana had to play Australia. So this is where this all started, where it was, which country do I go for? But I was just happy that one of them got a medal in that tournament, and that was Ghana that got bronze. But in general, Olympics, Ghana and Australia don't usually go off against each other. So Ghanaians will be athletics or boxing, football, Australia's swimming, cycling.
So it's obvious who you're rooting for depending on the sport itself.
Right. So I don't really have to be torn unless it's football. I like to see Canada do well as well. I'd love to see Canada bring home the 100 meter gold medal in the men's with Andre de Grasse, now that Usain Bolt is seemingly in retirement, but we'll see what happens.
No, it makes total sense. That makes total sense. I understand your pain when it comes to two sides you want to see equally win, and only one of them can. I had that happen, Super Bowl, Seattle Seahawks versus Denver Broncos, my AFC team and my NFC team. And secretly, I guess quietly, I was hoping Seattle would win because they hadn't won before, and they did. So it kind of worked out for me, but it was a lose-lose, win-win scenario, right? So I get that.
Do you remember what happened in the opening snap of that game?
Yeah. Peyton got leveled.
Did they find the ball? I think NASA's still looking for it. When Ascender just hyped it into the galaxy.
That game was over 30 seconds in.
Oh, boys, it landed in my backyard. I didn't tell you.
Oh, you got the ball, right?
Yeah.
Well, considering we're on the topic of Super Bowls, we got to talk about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that the league got exactly what they wanted in a Brady versus Mahomes matchup. This is a win-win situation for the NFL.
The old goat versus the new goat?
There we go. The passing of the torch between the two passes. How about that? In Tampa, Florida. The first team to play at home in the Buccaneers. So if Brady wins, he would have always had one home game in his title runs. Remember that.
That's right. But also, I want to look at it like, first thing I got to mention is we had our predictions of who would win the conference games, and one of us predicted the Kansas City Chiefs to move on. The other did not.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I was just waiting for this to come up. Yes, Cole, you're right. The Kansas City Chiefs trampled all over Buffalo.
I remember distinctly mentioning that Kelce and Hill would have very good games.
And bad Josh Allen showed up after a season of what people were saying was MVP-esque. Bad Josh Allen finally showed up.
Now, it was obvious that Kansas City was going to win that game shortly. And you get past the one hiccup early with Hardman. But beyond that, it was very obvious that Kansas City was going to cruise to a victory. Mm. It was not so obvious in the other conference title game, Green Bay versus the Bucks. And there's been some talk of things looking a little sketchy there. What do you think?
Yeah, look, Kerb, watching that game on Sunday, there are some calls that were just odd. Like, Sean Murphy bunting, I'm pretty sure it was him, he's up against Alan Lazard on a route, and he's basically got the guy's jersey. He's tugging it to the point where you can see the shoulder pads, and the play was not called pass interference. What happens? Murphy bunting gets interception. What do the Buccaneers do after that? They go score a touchdown.
Exactly.
So it's not like that was an innocuous call. That actually was a game-changing call. It wasn't one, but there's at least two or three of those where I'm thinking, what's going on here? Is there an extra player against Green Bay, or what's the story?
Yeah, there's a number of calls. Now, again, whenever you got a very highly contested game that's that important, and of course, referees aren't perfect. They're going to make mistakes. It's going to get scrutinized, but I think what people are complaining about here and why there's so much talk about it is because this has happened many, many times, and the one distinguishing factor through them all is a certain player on the field.
Player with the jersey number 12.
Exactly.
The debate will be out there. Was this a ploy to try and get number 12 to the Super Bowl? If it was, it worked. I will say this, though. He didn't have the best of games, but his defense stood up for him, all right? Shaq Barrett and the secondary made plays, all right? And also, Green Bay didn't help themselves. They didn't. The last play of their offensive drive, the last offensive series of the game for them, they have a third down where Rodgers is starting to run, but then he kind of gets pulled down. Now, he wasn't going to make the goal line, but he was trying to put his team in a position where they could win. So he ends up throwing into Devontae Adams, who's double or triple covered, and we get to fourth down. Now, if I'm down 4 or 5 points and there's two or 3 minutes on the clock, I'm trying to win the game to get the Super Bowl. I'm trying to win the game. This is not Detroit, man. This is a Super Bowl, as someone once said. You're going for it. It's not even a thing. You go for it. You either run it in or you do another pass play, but I don't know if it's analytics or some front office mantra, but Green Bay went for a field goal, took the ball out of their MVP. They took the ball out of their first ballot Hall of Famer quarterback and said, oh, we'll just trust our defense to make a play. Even though this is a defense which has a history of getting run down late in games. They are run funnel defense. And what did Tampa Bay do when they got the ball back? They got first downs. They got another first down. The game was over. Green Bay never got the ball back.
You mentioned some strong defensive play on the Tampa Bay side. Mm. And you specifically mentioned Shaq Barrett. Mm. Is Shaq Barrett a Tampa Bay Buccaneer next season?
This is a very good question, my friend. The thing we need to understand here, Kobe, is not just Shaq Barrett. It's also the other players in Tampa Bay. Because Chris Godwin is he's coming off contract. Antonio Brown is a free agent. this team has questions to be answered. If they win the Super Bowl, I don't see Brown coming back. I feel like he rides up into the sunset. By the way, listeners, note this fact. One of Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown is going to get a ring. How does Ben Roethlisberger feel about that? Anyway, going back to the Tampa Bay situation. They got guys coming off contract. Godwin, Brown, and Shaq Barrett's another one. And Gronkowski, is he going to come back? Or is this just like a one and done, let's get a ring and ride off into the sunset? The way their team is, someone's going to get the franchise tag. So is it Barrett or is it Godwin? I'm going to say Godwin will probably get the tag.
I'm going to agree with you there. Mm. And the reason I agree is I think this is still going to be Brady's team. Mm. And if it's Brady's team, it's an offensive team. Mm-hmm. So where can you make cuts? On the defensive right. side of the ball. So I don't really see Shaq Barrett as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer next season.
Yeah, and I can agree with that because they have JPP as well on the other side of the edge. So maybe they use their draft pick to get someone. It's a reasonable class of edge defenders. They could bring someone in through the draft. There's free agents, so Jadeveon Clowney, Yannick Ngakoue is another guy. These are guys who don't have rings. They want rings. There's Correct. Ring chasers out there. So everyone wants to play with Tom Brady, right? Especially now that he's shown us, whether we like it or not, he's shown us.
He can still play.
Without Belichick. So people are going to want attracted to that.
Hey, Justin here. Thank you for listening to our podcast thus far. If you'd like to read about more exclusive content, you can follow us on Twitter at @ppodcasters. Also on Twitter, you can connect with us via the messaging app.
Justin, I got a question for you.
Kobe, I have an answer.
As our casual fan,
mm-hmm.
what's your prediction for the Super Bowl?
So, deep down, I feel like Patrick Mahomes is going to take it. With that being said, I hope the GOAT does it one more time. I hope Tampa Bay wins. Now, with that being said, I think it would just be poetic justice if Tom Brady loses and it's his last season to Patrick Mahomes. If he's just like, you know what, that was it. I'm done. Good job, kid.
Okay, so you flip-flop three times. So who's your pick? Who's your pick to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, no, I said my pick is Kansas City. Okay. But I would love to see Tampa Bay win it.
Okay, so your brain says Kansas City, your heart says the Bucks.
Facts, yes.
Okay, I'll go next.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick to the same narrative I've been sticking to most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that the Kansas City Chiefs are a complete team to a level that there's no other team in the league right now can match. That they have too much skill at too many positions for any other team to overcome, including the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I don't care if you've got Tom Brady under center, there's only so many points they can put up on the board against an offense that can literally score at will. I expect the Kansas City Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
Now, look, Curb, I know we didn't agree on the championship weekend, and you were right in both games. Yeah, I said it, but Super Bowl, we're going to agree. Kansas City are immense. They're talented, and like you say, they're hard to stop with their weapons. And even if Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, does have a plan to stop Kelce and Hill, you've still got Mecole Hardman.
Damian Williams.
You got Darrell Williams. You got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We could even see some Byron Pringle. Why not? Patrick Mahomes does not care about your defensive plan. He will beat you.
Yeah, there's just too many available targets with too much talent. You can't cover them all. That offense is just ridiculous. I don't care how much time you give a team to prepare. They're going to get scored upon.
Not just that. It's also Andy Reid has a bye week this week. And we know what Andy Reid does after a bye week. He goes into his den or wherever, and he gets his playbook out and he just dials up some gold that we're going to see on the field in Tampa. So we can expect in the first half, we're going to see some nice plays because he draws up the plays in the first half, and then Tampa are going to have to react to that.
Put it this way, too. There's something else I want to say, and you'll hear a completely different story from the guys at NFL Network or NFL.com. They're going to frame this completely different than I would. They're going to tell you that Tom Brady beat the Green Bay Packers last week. If you look at the numbers, that is not the case. It was not Tom Brady. In fact, I'd say the Green Bay Packers beat themselves. Mm-hmm. But the Kansas City Chiefs trounced the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. And that's two very different sort of mindsets going into the Super Bowl. You've got one team that knows they just beat another team at will. And then you've got a second team against them that is lucky, honestly, to be there. It's two different schools of thought, and I prefer to be with a team that knows they've got it together and can get it done when they want to, versus if the ball bounces the right way and we get a few decent calls, we could be hoisting the trophy.
And not just that, Cole. Another narrative that you're going to see in Super Bowl week is, oh, Tampa had the first Super Bowl at home. Oh, home field advantage. Yay. 22,000 Tampa fans in the arena cheering on Tampa Buccaneers. Here's the deal. The road team has won more games in this season than the home team. Let that sink in. The road team has won more games this season than the home team. There's been one tie, obviously. But home field advantage has gone out of the window because you don't have full stadiums. So offenses can hear play calls. There's been more points scored this season than any other season in history. Teams are actually able to do what they want to do. They don't have the crowd distracting them and wide receivers straining to hear what the quarterback is saying in the line of scrimmage. It's clear. It's crisp. It's like this podcast. It's nice sound.
That's true. It almost takes away the home field advantage. It's almost non-existent, really.
Right. So that's another narrative I want to squash from the get-go, that there's going to be home field advantage. There might be a little bit of a advantage for Tampa Bay being not having to travel, but just remember this team that they're facing in the Chiefs, they played in Florida last year, and they want to win again in Florida.
How do you think our guy's going to do at halftime, the weekend?
Representing Canada and Scarborough?
That's right.
Yeah.
He going to bring it.
He will bring it. He'll do a fine job.
He'll be a star boy.
I'll have to find some prop bets on that.
Oh, my God.
He probably will. He'll find some weekend. Like rinky-dink website that's taken what will be his opening set.
I know a girl that is obsessed with The Weeknd, so she can always make some money. Inside information on Pro Sports Podcasts.
But there you have it. All three of us have picked a clean sweep for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode. Make sure you stay tuned for next Tuesday, where I will give you guys the lowdown on my thoughts and everything that's going on with the NWHL's new team, Toronto Six. What their strengths are, what the weaknesses are, where they're going, and what this means for the development of not only women's hockey, hockey in Canada, hockey around the world.